Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcasting out, whatever. I never know what to call this. This is episode 36. This time we have here Artur Sosins directly from Latvia. Hello, Artur. How are you doing?
Hello. Yeah, thank you. I'm fine. Quite nice. Nice Friday evening.
That's good to have you back. Michael Kunzel is still on a sabbatical license. He went somewhere. I think he is organizing the IndieConf event, and so he should be very busy. But hopefully next month we'll have him back. Meanwhile, it's always great to have you here, as you have also always great insights about things related to the JavaScript world. And then we are going to start talking precisely about just an update of a popular JavaScript application. Well, I think it is popular, at least for me, because I use it a lot. I don't know if you can see it already on the screen. This is JS Synth. I'm trying to increase the font here. Is it readable now?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, but I think I increased it too much, probably. Well, I don't know. They changed. It's just to mention that they changed the layout and the presentation of the application. As I was mentioning, I use it a lot to test issues that may I have in my code. I may have not noticed it, and along with the JS Lint, those are a couple of tools that I use a lot to make my code better. Anyway, just to mention that they have updated here, it seems they have updated mostly the user interface. Well, I don't know, personally, I cannot say I did like it much, this dark background color that makes me harder to read. And also, it took me a while to figure that now the options are in this button called Configure. Once you find the button, it's okay. But before, until then, I was a bit lost. I did not know how to disable certain warnings that I wanted to disable. Artur, do you use these tools, JS Lint and JS Hint, to somehow verify your code?
Well, unfortunately for now, I'm not actually working much on JavaScript for production, so currently no, nothing like that.
Yeah, but didn't you use it in the past?
I was using JS Lint, but well, actually, I did not know much about JS Lint.
Yeah, they somehow do the same thing. But probably they have a different set of warnings. So if you pass your code through both of those tools in the end, hopefully you have found more issues in your code and fixed them before shipping. That's what I've been doing every time I want to publish some code. I passed the code through these tools, and they have been very useful. Well, anyway, this is just to mention that there was this update to the JS Int, and what I was hoping is that at least there could be a better choice of colors, because I don't like this dark color in the background. Yeah. Well, anyway, it doesn't stop me from using it, because the tool is still useful. It has been improving a lot, and it is even more useful. Anyway, moving on to another topic that I want to mention now regarding consoles, which are used to help developers to see debug their applications. Some browsers have a feature that is not standardized, which is the console object that can use to log messages. But if for some reason it does not work in your browser, you can use this new library called console by Pierluigi Pezzenti, I suppose he is Italian, and this makes a console appear here on the left side. I don't know if this is configurable, but it is interesting because it is it seems to be able to keep monitoring certain objects. In this case, there is an object that seems to be being updated in real time, and here at the bottom, you can see the values being updated. And this somehow seems to be a more advanced type of console than what you can we can use in most browsers. Arthurs, do you use consoles to debug? At least when you use JavaScript on the browser.
I think that actually the most common thing that probably a web developer uses to debug, well, when he doesn't really need to go into some deep code inspection, basically you output the values you that is the best way to check and the best and more quickest way to check what you have running in your code. And it was usually a pain and quite slow to test between different browsers, but this in-browser solution seems to be quite nice, and it can track even different objects, and well, it's actually could be a great library.
Yes, probably it has an even more interesting feature that I confess I did not have the time to go to look into it in depth. So whoever is interested in having good consoles can may want to check it out, this console library. And also talking about consoles, I also found an interesting article related with also the console API that is not standardized across browsers. I think there is no specification what the console API does, so each browser implements their own console features, and they are not standardized. And depending on the browser, you may not be able to use certain features that you could use on other browsers. So this article by Axel Roschmeier, if I'm not pronouncing his name correctly, talks about the JavaScript console API and tells about the differences, the features that are available in each browser. And there is even a table that shows what features are available in each browser. And I thought it would be interesting to talk about this year because, as you also mentioned, it's probably the default debugging tool is the console, the browser console to show what is going on with the data.
Basically, this blog post actually proves why the previous tool is actually quite useful.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, if you would rather not use an external library for that, for some reason, you can always take a look at this article and figure what features are available on the browser that you are using to test and. Maybe take advantage of those features to help you debug your application. And now moving on with the Hangout, now I'd also like to mention another library that is it's quite interesting for several reasons. The library is named ?js, I suppose because ?? Is become somehow the default shortcut key to show some help to present the list of keyboard shortcuts for applications that allow the user to interact more quickly using the keyboard with those applications. So when you use the the ?? key, it usually presents the list of all possible keyboard shortcuts that are supported by the application, and basically this library just makes it easy to present those shortcuts. and let the user know about this. This is for many users, this is a sort of a secret feature, because many sites, many applications, especially Ajax applications, have these shortcuts, and only experienced users know about it. But if you are not aware, you may want to try the question mark key on many sites that you have used, and hopefully you don't realize there are some keyboard shortcuts available for you to interact faster. Arthur, were you aware about this sort of secret feature of using the question mark to find what are the keyboard shortcuts that an application supports?
Actually, no. I was using quite a lot of shortcuts from Gmail, but I actually did not know that Twitter had ones or that GitHub had ones. And
now it's discovered lots of secrets.
Yeah, I wonder if they have some Konami code shortcuts also.
But yeah. maybe.
The most interesting part is actually is that there are, well, as I see that usually there are quite a lot of small libraries that do one simple task, and this is a good example of them. And well, if I remember earlier, there was more like a framework that could do lots of stuff, but now in JavaScript world there is actually quite a lot of the small libraries that do just one simple stuff that you need and include it, and well, that's actually also great.
It's a sort of a Easter egg that many sites have. They have a secret, and they were not telling you that the secret was there. Now you're going to try the
in every website.
Exactly, with the question mark key in every site. Well, hopefully this will also encourage more website developers, including myself, to add the question mark keys support to trigger the Easter egg of the shortcuts for the sites. I think it makes more sense for Ajax applications that you sort of are always only on the same page. And anyway, let's move on with another interesting library that I found here, which is basically to help presenting and do presentations, slide presentations of those types of presentations that you do with PowerPoint or OpenOffice presentation application. And this one allows you to present not only slides, but also do it in a cooperative way with multiple users. So this reveal.js, I'm trying to find here. Where did I find the link for the demo? It was interesting.
You mean the try it out link?
Exactly.
Big letters.
That's what happens when you get old and it started having difficulties to see things. So I think you can see it already. So this is a presentation, and I think you can go to a specific page and you can enter as guest. I don't know. I don't know if you can also join this presentation here by going to the same URL.
Let me try it. Okay, let me enter another name. And I'm in. I can only see me.
Yeah, so I don't know.
There is a share link below. Maybe it's have some different ID or something.
Where is the share link? Oh, here. Okay, let me paste in the chat window the one that I am using so you can go there. Where is the chat window? Here. Okay, try that link and see if you can join.
Okay.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah, and it works.
It works. So can you try to use the keyboard keys to switch.
Sure.
Oh, this is amazing. Welcome to the future.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool.
Exactly. And I don't bother trying the question mark key. I already did it and no shortcuts appeared. But it would make sense. Let me see. Oh, I see. I was trying to figure if there were any options to do any other thing other than go back and forth.
It seems not in this presentation, but probably you can create together presentations, edit them or something like that.
But it's interesting because when you click on different parts of the screen, I can see where you are clicking.
Yeah? Oh yeah, me too. The same for you.
Yeah. Well, this is an awesome library. It's certainly very encouraging to use this to do online presentations. The only detail is that it probably needs an internet connection, or else how are people going to share?
It seems that it uses a Review.js and some sort of Go instance service, right? Because, well, you need some sort of a backend for this.
Yeah, and probably this costs money if you use it intensively. Well, anyway, this is just to tell about how interesting things can be in terms of collaborative applications. Well, personally, I liked it a lot, and it already gives me some ideas of things, presentations that I could use to with this library. Okay, but let's move on to another library here. And this one is about another an unusual use of JavaScript. Sharing the screen here. Okay, this one is about, let me see if I can increase the font here. Basically, what it shows here, it seems to be like a video, but in reality, just a sequence of pictures. And the idea is to, instead of using a video player that for some reason might not be working in your browser, it uses a sequence of images. I think they are JPEG, and you can present a video using those images. I don't know, probably it's not the most efficient way to present a video because it takes a lot more space, a lot more images than a regular video that is all compressed frame by frame. Anyway, it has certain interesting effects here, like pausing, playing, and then you can also apply some image effects.
Yes.
Probably not very useful, but just to say that you can, not necessarily that you won't.
Well, the most interesting part is actually that it's a simple image object which has its data source changed all the time, and what you can customize it with CSS as much as you want. Basically, it's a simple image. And
right.
That's why it might be so cool, because, well, it's a video and a customizable simple HTML element.
Right. I suppose this probably is only viable if you have a good connection to the server where are the images. Probably the images are preloaded to make it smooth.
Well, you won't watch movies or something, but for, I don't know, advertisements, it could work quite great.
Yes, that's a good point. Because that probably is a good idea to work around the fact that many people are using head blockers
that
block JavaScript and Flash and whatever to prevent ads to appear. And with this library, it probably will work around, at least for now, those head blockers. Anyway, it seems to very simple to use.
And if you scroll it down, you also see that there is a tutorial how to, for example, convert a video to set of images and generate a JSON file to load it. So it seems quite usable, and they thought it through, the whole process.
Yeah. I suppose whoever developed this had a real need for this. It was not just done for fun.
Exactly.
And that's why it's quite well developed, I think. And I was trying to figure who is the developer. I cannot.
At the bottom of the page, there is a made by Wagner Santana.
This sounds like a Brazilian. Probably is a Brazilian. Anyway, congratulations to the author, regardless wherever he is from. It was a quite interesting idea. I'm sure it has. It is useful.
You are right. He's a Brazilian.
Yeah, the name sounded Brazilian.
Okay.
That's a typical Brazilian name. Moving on with the Hangout. Now talking about another interesting library. Probably this is a simpler one. Let me share the screen here. This is Offline JS, and also use the wrong keyboard shortcut. And again, it does not support the question mark.
Yeah, I already tried.
Now we're going to try the question mark Easter egg for all the sites. Anyway, this is a library to basically help detecting when the user have lost his connection. Probably he was on a 3G connection that was so lousy that it dropped and he lost the connection. And it may be interesting for doing stuff that you may want to save the user work, probably in local storage of the browsers. Hopefully, it will help the applications to save the user data before he probably he's only be able to get back his connectivity a long time afterwards, and probably it can be used to trigger some events on which the application would save that data and recover it later. Yeah,
you could probably, if usually you try to save your data at the backend at server, then if user lost connection, you can try to fall back to saving it in local storage and then synchronize it.
Yeah, and they have some demo here. Because I'm not losing my connection, they're just simulating it.
to see
what happens.
They have lots of themes for displaying the user interface of the message.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how this works in practice, because it seems to suggest that it's trying to reconnect.
Well, as I see, I'm looking at the code right now, and it just uses this simple HTTP request that you can send through the JavaScript. Let me check now. It's basically XHR object.
Right. From what I thought, browsers with HTML support already have a sort of standard way to detect when the connection is lost. So I was wondering what else this library would do. Mm. So it says it remakes the connection when.
Well, basically, it tries to ping some server and try to see if it connects him or the connection fails and.
Probably. Well, maybe inspecting the code will reveal us what exactly does it do, but unfortunately we do not have the time. So we are going now to move on to another section of this Hangout. This time I would like to comment on a couple of articles that were published on the JS Classes site. Let me share the screen here, if I can. Okay, basically there is this article from Jason Gerfen. He's a developer of an object called sexstore.js. That object, basically what it does is to use the local storage to save same data. The data can be not only in local storage, it can also be stored in cookies. The only detail here is that you use cryptography to store the information more securely. So this is a very brief article. It just tells a bit about why and how you should be using cryptography to store sensitive information that you may have in your browser. I don't know. Personally, I never use cryptography to store, not even, at least in the browser side. I already use cookies with encrypted information, but that those were set on the server side. And now for the browser side, probably this makes more sense of, to use on AJAX applications that generate information, and that information needs to be stored on the browser side. Arthur, have you used any application that you need to store something on local storage, or maybe in cookies?
Well, I could think of some usages for it. For example, some AJAX games could use it because, well, you would not want to connect to the server all the time and only synchronize sometimes, and meanwhile store it on the user side. But the way that user could not modify it and progress in game, for example, further, there could be a lot of usages. Yeah, but the ones that he mentioned is actually the more of a security that could get a cross site. And some other could get all your information, so it's about more storing of sensitive information in cookies and local storage.
Right. Well, what I was wondering is, where does the key is stored? Because if this key is also stored on the browser side, it's probably not really secure. It's just making it less obvious to crack, because if an application is exploited and the user's data is stolen somehow, they can also steal the key and have it decrypted somewhere else. So maybe this is more like, for instance, the machine of the user was compromised and they steal the information of the let's say, for instance, of that is stored by the browser, but for some reason the key is obtained from somewhere else. Well, I don't know if this is going to guarantee a really secure system. Probably just make it harder to secure, to break, not necessarily difficult.
Well, doesn't any security is almost only making it harder, because, well, if you have enough time, you can crack almost anything.
Yeah, but it's different when you, if you need to, if you already have the key or stored in the same place as the information, you are not really raising a great difficulty here. Now, if you need to enter a password, so if the user needs to enter a password, and the password only the user knows about it, that's different, because the password is in the user's mind, not in the computer. Well, maybe I'm missing the point here. Probably this cryptography here requires a password that only the user knows, and it is not really stored in the browser. Probably that's the case.
It should be like that, yes.
Well, anyway, this is just to mention about this sex store class. It is funny that now I just reading the name of the class, it suggested it would be called sex store. it was not intentional. This, I'm sure.
Secure store.
Exactly. I'm sure the author did not have the intention to confuse people. Anyway, moving on to another article that this time it was an article that I wrote because I published an object that I had the need to develop. Basically, what it allows is to put a scroll bar not only at the bottom of large page elements that you that do for some reason the browser window, and what happens in the case for this is, for instance, when I need to show code of JS classes or even PHP classes, when the code is too long, I mean, the code would not fit on the current window because it has many lines. I could make a scroll bar appear, but the scroll bar would be appearing at the top of the code, so the user need to scroll all the way.
At the bottom.
All the way to the bottom of the page element, and end up not seeing the scroll bar. So I created this component that would attach another scroll bar at the top of the page element. It's a separate element, but it will become attached and synchronized. Maybe I should try to show this rather than just telling, because it's always easier. But I need to let me see if in the package that I'm talking about I have a good example of a file. I think let's see if this code is the case. No, it's not the case. Maybe if I increase the font so it becomes too large. No, because the browser did add its own scroll bar. Let me try to find very quickly some other package. For instance, I know that this happens more to me in PHP classes than in JS classes. Because nowadays, I try to not exceed much the length of a package.
You could minimize the browser window.
Oh, good idea. Why didn't I have thought of that? Let me go back to that code that was already open. I don't know if it's... Oh, I think it works, but I need to reload the page. No, not yet. I need to reduce it again. Well, for some reason, I'm not able to show it.
Because you're showing to everyone else. If
right.
You're demonstrating it, it doesn't work. That's true.
Exactly, Murphy's Law. Or maybe I'm not... Oh, I remember that probably... that's a limitation of my own component that is not able to figure when the container has resized it. Well, let me try one PHP class code that I associate.
Yes, your surrounding has a predefined width, and that is why.
Yeah. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Okay, so I scroll it here, and. You see the scroll bar. And another thing is that if you are in the middle of the code, you may wonder, oh, the scroll bar is at the top, let me scroll back. So it would be good if I could use the keyboard. So I attached, I had to implement a sort of a trick that makes the container here get the keyboard focus. So when you enter the container, it gets the keyboard focus, and you can immediately use the arrow keys to move the code in and out. And this way, you can see code that was not visible.
So is it an actual scroll bar, or is it some HTML emulated?
No, the way it works, it attaches a new page element that gets the same width of the container.
Uh-huh. And then you attach all the scroll events to it.
Yeah, so then it listens to the scroll events, and when one scroll bar is updated, it updates the other as well, so they become synchronized.
Yeah, great solution.
Yes, I had this problem for many years because I could not figure. I tried in the past to think, well, what if I word wrap the code? And I tried that and it looked bad because you could not figure exactly the lines. So
since the top scrubber is basically a separate div element, you could also fixed it to the top, so if you're scrolling down, it would always appear on the top of the window or something like that.
Oh, you mean attached in another part of the window that is fixed? Well, it could be an idea. I don't know if it would work well. I would have to try it. Another thing is because just because you can use the keyboard, it doesn't mean that it is obvious for the user that you need to use the keyboard.
That's why you need a question mark.
Exactly. there is a point. There is a use for using the question mark JS library. And what I thought was also to maybe when having some virtual element here on the site, so when the user goes there, probably an arrow would appear, so he could click and scroll the content.
That could also work, yes.
Yes. Well, for now, this is just the first edition of this library that I have developed. The library itself is on this page, jsclasses.org/scrollbar2top. And the idea is precisely to address this need, which is mostly useful when you need to show long content that is not only wide but is also tall, which is often the case of code but could be for other types of articles. And this is library was released recently, and I wrote this article to explain how you can address this problem using the library.
Will it participate in Innovation Award?
No, because the employees of this company are forbidden to participate in their own contests.
Then I will never work for you.
Exactly. Don't do that, or else you are not able to participate. Basically, we covered this article. One thing that I wanted to mention is that this. Writing articles about your packages is one way to get more exposure to the packages, because not only you tell your users of the packages to use your packages in a better way, but if it is an article that is useful for users in general, not just the users of your packages, you can, when you publish the article, there is a flag that you can use a checkbox to tell the moderator to make the article featured. And if the moderator agrees, okay, the moderator happens to be me, and agrees that it is an article that is useful for the users in general, not just the users of that specific package, the article becomes featured and it sort of becomes part of the main site blog, and you get a lot more exposure for your packages.
So maybe you could elaborate on the criteria that you deem to be worthy to be published in the main blog.
Practically I already mentioned it, which is the article has to be useful in general, not just for the users of that package. For instance, if you are publishing an article that says, "Oh, I published a new version, and these are the new features," but you don't actually teach anything about the features, that probably would not qualify. But if you elaborate an article that explains how to use the class and why it is useful, why those features that you implemented are useful, in that case, it is useful for other users because it actually tells them that they could be using that package to take advantage of its features. And if they were not using it, at least now they become aware of those features.
Basically, you could start with defining the problem and then showing how your package solves this problem.
Yes, exactly. It's generally it falls in the category of tutorials. If you make a tutorial about your class, you are good to get great exposure. And other than that, I'm going to show you another thing here, which is the fact that since the site implemented the reputation system that awards reputation points to all users that perform relevant actions, you can go here on the your reputation page, just clicking on the yellow button that appears at the top, and it will show you the log of actions that you did. And in my case, since I published this article, you can see there are some actions you earn additional points for those actions. You earn 300 points for publishing a blog post about your package, not necessarily featured. And then you earn additional 500 points for publishing a package blog post that was considered to be featured. And it shows you in your log, and you can simply also check that it increased your reputation as class author and article author. So those are two types of reputation that you can earn points. In this case, article author, I click here, and I can see all the articles that made me earn points for this and this type of reputation. And and then also the class author, I can see all the actions, which include the publishing packages and the number of users of the packages, and so on. So this is just yet another tip for all developers publishing articles, useful tutorial articles about your own packages, not only get you more exposure to your package, but also get you more reputation. And hopefully,
what I could see is actually that you only have a little less than 10,000 reputation points.
Yeah, and that's true, because I'm not the top author of this site. Damn, I need to try harder.
So, how many authors did beat you already?
Oh, now that you're asking, you can always check, because it's easy. Just go on that reputation. Let me see the reputation page, and you click on the ranking, and you can see that I'm in 13. My position is 13. I have 9,000 points, and there are like 12 authors ahead of me. You can also click on there. Oh, who's number one? A guy from Latvia. Let's see what he did. He earned quite a lot of points. Why did he earn quite a lot of points? Let's see what he did by action. So he won the Innovation Award a couple of times. Oh, he earned 5,000 points. The Innovation Award results earned you more 9,000 points. The users of your packages more 5,000 plus points. Publishing 45 packages. Man, you published 45 packages.
You could really see all my stats also? You can see all the other authors?
Yes, for all authors, this is public information, because for some users, you are hiding the details. Why you got more points? So, for instance, you can check the Nikos M from
Greece. I just don't want to share the secret.
Oh, exactly. You don't want the others to beat you. But, I think to get to the... Look, the second place only has 13,000 points. And that's... this is the reputation by type, but by action, you can see in this case that he published 5 packages. If he published like 45 packages like yourself, it probably will beat you. And if the packages are innovative, we even get more points. And anyway, this is just a sort of making this more rewarding and fun for all the people that participate here. I hope it is being taken that way. I don't know if a few artists like to comment what have you thought about implementing this, not that we are talking about it. Do you think it is encouraging to publish more, or at least as long as you are number one?
Yeah, always need to keep track of it, you know.
So you don't get beat. Yes, because other than that, just to comment for all authors that are not aware, if they once they start ranking for publishing their packages, they start getting a report by email once a week that they can follow their position. So if somebody is catching up and passing you, you can get back and recover and go ahead. But what you were saying about your experience about this, do you feel it is encouraging, or maybe it could be better somehow?
Well, no, actually, that is quite great. I just didn't know that you could look and see at other authors. But well, as you said, I really have nothing to worry about for now. So maybe may not be so motivating for me. But well, it could be really motivating for other authors trying to beat me.
Yes. Well, that is considering that you. Your goal is to be number one, but not everybody is competitive. Some people are perfectly happy to get recognition for being innovative and earning prizes for the Innovation Award. And well, it depends on the objectives of each one.
Yeah.
And anyway, they're talking about the Innovation Award. Now it's time to move on to one final section on which we comment about the Innovation Award winners. This time we'll talk about the award winners of August that were voted in September, and then in October the results came out. So since we already passed that, we are now able to comment about them. Arthur, which one would you like to comment?
Okay, let me comment on JS Measure, because I actually just made it to work. It had some other dependency libraries also. Available on JS classes.
Yeah.
Needed some time to get working, and I can share the screen. Let me just zoom it a little more. And as you can see,
did you try the question mark
on
the page? It shows the shortcuts already on the page.
It shows the shortcut for Google Hangout. Yeah, Google Hangout actually works. Yeah, but this page now. But that is just a demo. So you need to do to try to measure some element, all you need to do is to press Control M, which is actually not quite handy because I usually use left control and I can't reach the M letter. So let me try the right control. So then the cursor changes and you can start measuring. Basically, what it shows the position which you started to measure and with height of the element. How does it respond to scrolling? Okay. So basically, yeah, it's scroll independent. So yeah, it actually could be a great maybe designing tool, debugging to see how to place all the HTML elements inside. And yeah. Well, it's how it's implemented. It's basically a overlay div element which follows the mouse events, the drag and drop events, and draws that measure with all the measurements available in the legend in the bottom right corner.
Right. Well, it sounds interesting. I was just not sure what would be the use case for this. It's innovative, certainly. That's why it was nominated. Maybe the author, in this case, it was Mark Rolich from Armenia, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he has an application on which that is useful.
Well, let's say you want to upload an image and the uploader doesn't have a resizer or any specifications. It is possible to save a bookmark with, and then you go to your website that you need, open the bookmark, it injects the JavaScript, and then you can measure with dimensions of the image, and you can upload a new one or change it or something like that.
Okay, that's probably an use case, because I'm sure all the work it took to develop this class was not just for the fun, I think. That's me assuming things. Anyway, well, on my part, I also like to comment on a couple of other classes that were nominated, and The first one is this one, JS Data Range Picker, which is a sort of an advanced version of date pickers, except this one lets you define a range, so you have actually two dates to pick, and I suppose it does some validation to make sure that the end date does not exceed, I mean, is not before the start date, and I'm sure this is very useful. In this case, it was an object developed by Valo Reima from Estonia. Do you think this is the right way to pronounce his name? It's your neighbor, right?
Well, yeah, the language is completely different, but yeah, it seems to be Valo Reima. That could be.
Okay.
Something like that.
So it's not that bad.
Yeah.
No, it's always a drama. How to pronounce the names of the authors correctly without them being offended because your pronunciation sucks.
You should implement usernames.
Yeah. Just let them choose alias in English.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they pronounce the names. Well, it doesn't matter. People can pick the names that they want. Not all authors use their real names, but it's always the challenge every month trying to pronounce the name correctly. So moving on, there's another package to comment about this month. This one is a bit unusual, extend m.js, which is basically to extend the number object with a few more functions. This one was developed by Martin Barker from in the UK, and he has published quite a lot of packages. Some of them are innovative, and hopefully he continues to publish more innovative packages. So basically what this object does, it's quite simple. It extends the number object with a few more functions to check if the number, for instance, is odd or even, or if the number is floating point or is an integer, and eventually also initialize it to some random number between some range and some other functions. Well, I think most of these functions are available separately, but in this case it provided it as an extension of the number object. So you can create your own objects with those functions, and they will be available from the start.
Yes, so as I see, it basically provides lots of math library methods to the number object itself for easier usage. And, for example, simplifies the usage of random, because, well, in JavaScript it's always kind of pain to generate random number between two. You always have to look up how you can do that, really. And
right. And in this case, I think probably the most useful aspect is to teach how to extend an existing built-in class of objects in JavaScript, and use that extension to add a few more functions and make it more useful somehow. Well, anyway, practically ended this hangout. We covered several interesting libraries, mostly that this month was mostly about it. Existing libraries, most of them were very interesting. And with this, we have ended the podcast. I'd like to thank you, Artis, for coming. Sure. Hopefully, we can have you back in the future. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.